Postcard from Spain with Vernon Pierce.
Welcome to the September edition of my Postcard from Spain podcast, in which I'm going to be pursuing some theories as to how Spanish tapas came about. We'll have a couple of news items regarding Spain's population increase, also some good news about unemployment. We'll be looking at the rising cost of living in Spain, recent earthquakes in the Granada region, and a light-hearted look at painted pigeons. Tapas are an intrinsic part of Spanish eating culture, consisting of small plates of food shared with friends or family, along with drinks. And I'm going to share with you some fascinating theories about how this typically Spanish way of eating came to be. The Spanish dictionary defines tapa as a small portion of food served as an accompaniment to a drink. And although the concept of tapas dates back many years, the first definition in their dictionary only dates back to 1939. Back then, it wasn't used all over the country either. It was considered to be an Andalusian term, and it wasn't until 1970 that it began to be used throughout Spain. Of course, the word tapa also means lid in Spanish. In fact, one of the main theories as to the origin of these small snacks has to do with the fact that they acted as lids on top of wine and beer glasses. According to legend, the tavern keepers covered the jugs of wine with a thick slice of jamón serrano ham to prevent dust, dirt and insects falling inside. Yet another hypothesis is to do with Alfonso X in the 13th century, who began asking for his wine accompanied by small snacks to counteract the effects of alcohol due to an illness he had. So he ordered that all Castilian inns should only serve alcohol along with a small portion of food. This also fits in with another historical theory, which says that innkeepers were forced to serve their drinks with a plate of food placed on top, so as cart and carriage drivers didn't leave so inebriated and have so many accidents. It's said they had to finish their food first before removing the lid to drink the wine or beer. Another theory is that the idea of tapas was originally born as a result of the food shortages during the Spanish Civil War, when eating small bites between meals was in order to try and stave off hunger. Whichever version of the story you believe, it's clear that tapas are almost always accompanied by a drink. Whether they were originally used as a lid, a way of preventing drunkenness, or as a result of rationing, it's clear that tapas are an intrinsic part of Spanish gastronomy and eating culture. Tapas are known and loved throughout the world, and they're a big part of both the social lives of the Spaniards and foreigners who live here, as well as being a foodie experience you want to have as a tourist. Furthermore, Spaniards rarely drink without nibbling on something at the same time, lining their stomachs, and in the process, not getting as drunk as people in other European countries. Spain's population reached a record 49.8 million in the second quarter of 2026, with more than 100,000 new residents added to the census in just 3 months. Spain's population continues to grow month by month in 2026, and it's likely that the country will reach 50 million inhabitants by this year or next. The stats show that Spain's population born abroad now totals nearly 10.3 million people, around 1 in 5 residents in Spain, but this includes those who've acquired Spanish citizenship. The main nationalities of new immigrants were Colombians, with 34,000 arrivals in Spain, Venezuelan, 20,300, and Moroccan, 21,100. If you're wondering if Spain's widely reported migrant amnesty has had an impact on the second quarter's increase in population, the answer is most likely no. Even though over 1 million undocumented people living in the country applied for residency earlier this year, the Institute of National Statistics already included most of these migrants in the census, as most were registered on the padrón in the town hall. During this second quarter, the population has grown in all Spanish regions and cities. The largest increases occurred in the Valencian community, the Balearic Islands, and the Principality of Asturias. It might be interesting to note that Spain surpassed the barrier of 35 million inhabitants in 1974, $40 million in 1997 and $45 million in 2007. Spain's job market has reached a new milestone, with a record 22.8 million people now in work, after almost 486,000 jobs were created between April and June. Seasonal summer hiring, particularly in the services sector, helped push the unemployment rate below 10% for the first time since 2008, falling to 9.87%. While the figures reflect a strong labour market, Spain still has one of the highest unemployment rates in the EU. Despite Spain achieving this record employment and its lowest unemployment rate since 2008, nearly 500,000 people aged over 55 remain unemployed. Older job seekers account for 1 in 5 unemployed people, with those over 60 facing worsening prospects. Campaigners are urging employers to tackle age discrimination. Many foreigners cite Spain's comparatively low cost of living as one of the major factors for moving here. But is it still a very affordable place to live? Spain is so cheap, is a common phrase seen on social media forums and even among tourists on the streets of major cities. I can't believe X only costs me so much. It's a lot more affordable than back home. While Spain may seem cheap to you, it's important to remember that for the local people living here, earning average Spanish wages, it's not cheap at all. In fact, Spain is expensive for them. To keep extolling the virtues of a cheap Spain is more than a little insensitive. And is it true that Spain is still really that affordable? According to the latest data from Spain's National Statistics Institute in 2024, the latest data available, the average salary here was $29,540 gross per year. That's very different to the stats from the US average and means people in the US earn around 20,000 euros more per year. The second question to ask is Spain still actually an affordable country? The reality is no, not really. While it might seem more affordable to you, the truth is prices and cost of living have risen considerably over the last couple of decades. Those bargain properties, that cheap weekly shop, and eating out have all become a lot more expensive. So even if you earn more, your money now won't necessarily go as far. A recent study shows that Spain has seen a 78% increase in the cost of living in the last decade. This means that it's among the countries where cost of living has risen most in the last 10 years. It's only beaten by Hungary, where costs rose by 110%, and Portugal, where they increased by 99%. Also more than the United States at 48%. Unsurprisingly, the biggest increase has been property. According to real estate website Fotocasa, the cumulative price of homes for sale in Spain rose by around 29% between 2014 and 2024. The EU recently confirmed that housing costs in Spain have increased 3 times more than the European average, and salaries are not keeping pace in most cases. It's not just buying a home which has become increasingly expensive in Spain. Renting is too. According to the Bank of Spain, Spaniards are spending between 40 and 50% of their salary on rent, while they suggest the ideal amount should be 25 to 35% of net monthly income. Of course, food has increased considerably in Spain too. In fact, you might be shocked when visiting the supermarket or even in a bar how much items cost you. In 2010, a coffee in any bar in Spain cost 1 euro, while now it averages between 1.30 and 1.80. The same is true for loaves of bread. 20 years ago, the price was less than 40 cents, while now a loaf of bread easily exceeds 60 cents. In fact, Spaniards are now paying the highest amount for their weekly shop in history, after food prices soared by 41.5% since 2018. The same data also shows that water, electricity and other fuels have increased by 23% since 2018. Furniture and other household items have increased by 16%, transport by 22.5%, and eating out and staying in a hotel by a massive 32.6%. It's true that wages have increased in Spain, but it seems the increase isn't enough to meet these prices and current costs. So next time you think of Spain as being a cheap or affordable country, you might want to do a reality check before you say this in front of locals or write it on social media. Those of you thinking of moving to Spain and haven't yet made up your mind where to settle, you may be interested in this following story. Granada has been experiencing an unusual active period of earthquakes since mid-August. Firstly, there was a magnitude 5 earthquake south of Granada at approximately 10 kilometres depth. This was felt widely across Andalusia and caused damage to buildings and vehicles, although no serious structural damage or deaths were initially reported. 3 days later, several stronger shocks followed. These were of a magnitude 4. And then overnight on the 18th-19th of August, the sequence continued with 6 further earthquakes, 5 of them with magnitudes up to 2.6. Reports now describe hundreds of small earthquakes since around the 14th, prompting discussion amongst seismologists of a possible earthquake swarm, rather than simply one main shock followed by conventional aftershocks. It's not a completely unexpected phenomenon. The Granada Basin is one of the most seismically active areas of the Iberian Peninsula. The Spanish National Geographic Institute says earthquakes there are generally shallow, less than 30 kilometres, and mostly low to moderate magnitude, associated with active faults beneath the basin. That shallow depth is important. A magnitude 4 to 5 earthquake close to Granada can feel considerably more dramatic than its magnitude alone might suggest, and can cause non-structural damage such as cracks, falling masonry and broken windows. So should you be worried about a larger earthquake? Well, there's no reliable way to predict whether a large earthquake will occur next. The current sequence could gradually die away, as earthquake sequences commonly do. But it's also possible for further moderate shocks to occur. The important point is that the recent magnitude 5 earthquake doesn't mean a much larger earthquake is imminent. Likewise, the continuing smaller earthquakes don't provide a reliable countdown to one. Experts quoted in the Spanish press have stressed that future earthquakes cannot currently be predicted. For perspective, Granada has a long history of significant earthquakes, including destructive historical events. The region's combination of active faults and shallow seismicity is why earthquake-resistant construction and preparedness are taken seriously there. Authorities are still inspecting buildings and maintaining seismic emergency precautions, but there is no evidence that a major earthquake is definitely about to happen. Our final item in this podcast is entitled Painted Pigeons. In Spain, painted pigeons and pigeon racing are part of a long Mediterranean tradition, particularly strong in Valencia, Murcia, Andalusia, and the Canary Islands. It started when the Arabs settled in Spain in the year 711, bringing with them the pigeon, valued for its meat, plumage, and providing palomino, a high-quality natural fertilizer. In 1773, the first pigeon sports club was started in Murcia, but it wasn't until 200 years later that pigeon breeding was officially recognised as a national sport, when the Federación Española de Colombicultura was set up. The Spanish tradition is especially distinctive because the birds are not simply raced for speed. Colour, courtship, breeding, and the behaviour of the birds are all important. A particularly Spanish tradition is the keeping of palomas de raza, fancy or breed pigeons selected for their appearance and characteristics. Breeders have developed birds with striking plumage patterns, unusual colours, feathering and body shapes. In the Valencia region, you may encounter the tradition of palomas deportivos, and, more specifically, palomas de color. Birds can be carefully bred and displayed almost like living pieces of folk art. Their colours and patterns can have specialised names, and breeders take considerable pride in maintaining particular bloodlines. Spain has a particularly rich culture of colombicultura, the sport and art of breeding and keeping pigeons. There are actually several related forms of competition. The best known, in parts of eastern Spain, where I live, is colombicultura deportiva, where specifically trained male pigeons compete in flights involving a female pigeon. The males attempt to court and follow the female, and judges award points according to their behaviour and ability to stay with her. We often see these events taking part in our valley, and their progress is avidly followed by the owners, who keep in touch with two-way radios and try to be first on the scene as soon as the pigeons settle. This makes Spanish pigeon sport rather different from the image of a conventional race, say in the UK, where birds simply fly from A to B. A typical competition usually involves the release of a specially selected female, usually white in colour, and sometimes called the Paloma de Suelta. Several competing males pursue her, displaying courtship behaviour and attempting to remain with her. Judges observe the birds and award points according to the competition's rules, and the bird whose performance earns the most points wins. We watch these competitions from our terrace, and on one occasion, the birds decided to settle in our villa on the roof, which resulted in us being invaded by owners with their CB radios wanting to inspect the female to see the colour of the male pigeon who'd successfully been the first to mate. The connection between painting or colouring pigeons and the competition is particularly interesting. In some traditions, pigeons are marked or coloured so that individual birds can be distinguished easily, especially when many birds are flying together. Historically, this was useful when competitors needed to identify their own birds at a distance. Today, elaborate colours and patterns can also be part of the culture of pigeon breeding itself. There's an important distinction, though. Not every Spanish painted pigeon is literally painted with permanent artistic pigment. Much of what looks like painting is actually the result of selective breeding for naturally occurring plumage colours and patterns. While temporary marking may also be used in particular competitions to help identify the male who has mated with the female first. This tradition, as I've said, is particularly prominent here in the Comunitat de Valencia, where I live, and the culture has local clubs, breeders, competitions, and specialised vocabulary. It's more than a hobby for enthusiasts. Traditionally, pigeon lofts can form part of a neighbourhood and rural life, and knowledge about bloodlines, breeding, feeding, training, and the behaviour of individual birds is often passed between generations. One reason the tradition can seem unusual to outsiders is that the athlete isn't necessarily being trained to fly the fastest. In the Valencian-style sport, breeders may spend years selecting a male whose instincts, persistence, intelligence, and courtship behaviour may make him exceptionally good at following the female. So the pigeon becomes something between a sporting animal, a breeding achievement, and a family heirloom. And I'm led to believe that a lot of betting takes place during some of these competitions.